Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The pushback to many of the executive orders Donald Trump has issued in his first 100-plus days in office has begun. Among those responding to attacks, threats, and orders mandating certain behaviors are colleges and universities. Over 600 leaders of those institutions have signed a statement for constructive engagement with the administration to try to iron out their differences. The schools are worried about cuts in funding for research projects, some of which are already underway. They're concerned about the status of student visas, and they are resisting changes to their own initiatives based on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Among the institutions signing that statement were Duke and Wake Forest Universities in North Carolina and Davidson College. We invited a representative from Duke University to join us for the hour. They declined. Wake Forest University's president initially expressed interest in participating, but then declined due to a scheduling conflict. But Davidson College president Doug Hicks is here. He believes that institutions of higher learning must rebuild their relationship with the public, reminding them how these schools can be engines for social good, which make huge economic contributions. We're going to talk about that and a lot more. Dr. Hicks, thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. You have been Davidson College's president since 2022, but before that, you were dean of the Oxford College at Emory University. You're a graduate of Davidson with a Master in Divinity from Duke and a PhD in religion from Harvard. You taught at Colgate. You've taught at the University of Richmond, which is a long way of saying you've been doing this for a long, long time. You've been in academia for a long, long time. Have you ever seen anything like the initiatives put forth by the Trump administration and his attempts to mold higher education to conform with a political agenda?
Mike, I have not seen anything quite like this moment in higher education. I've seen, you know, challenges and meaningful conversations about what the role of higher education is. I've seen different administrations take focused approaches to dealing with universities and colleges, almost always in a constructive way, and more, I'd say, with a scalpel than with a large tool, an axe or a sledgehammer. And so the current moment is concerning to me and those of us who care so deeply about education in America.
Aside from the letter that we'll talk about, that you signed and others signed of college presidents around the country, what has been your personal reaction to this, your professional reaction? What are your fears about what this might mean?
Well, first, I believe deeply in the education we provide for our students at Davidson. As you said, I'm an alumnus, and I've committed my life to educating students for lives of leadership and service at great colleges and universities. I was a beneficiary of role models and mentors at Davidson and then at Duke and Harvard. And so I have a sense of deep regret that this is happening, because most things at higher ed institutions, at colleges and universities, are really valuable, and they are they're contributing to people's lives, preparing them for the workforce and for citizenship. And so to see a lot of animosity towards what we do or distrust in what we do, it's concerning. And I'm taking it very seriously, because when you see polls that say Americans, both Democrats and Republicans, have lost some level of trust in higher ed over the last decade, that is something we need to address head on. But I want to do it constructively instead of so conflictually.
What do you think is driving that increase? Because there's an increase in distrust in all of our institutions. Some of it is being fed by the right wing. Some of it is being fed by right wing media. Some of it is being fed by Donald Trump and people of his ilk. But what about some liberals take issue with this? Some people are now questioning the value of a college education because it saddles so many people with so much debt. What's driving this?
Well, Mike, as you said, there are always many factors happening at once, and there clearly is some political edge to some of the criticisms. At the same time, indebtedness through for-profit universities and other colleges and universities has moved up. What we've done at Davidson, for instance, only a few colleges are doing in America. You know, we're need blind. We meet 100% of need and do it without loans. So we owe it to our students to help them graduate with very low debt or no debt so that they can choose their careers and begin their lives. But the student debt crisis has had a cumulative effect on some people's lives. And then they have some resentment towards that. So that's a real thing, Mike. And then we need to be talking about preparing people for good jobs as part of what we do. We love ideas for ideas' sake, and we love ideas because they prepare people to go out and solve problems in the workforce.
The letter you and 600 other college and university presidents signed was developed after national meetings convened by the American Association of Colleges and Universities and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And it states, in part, quote, "As leaders of America's colleges and universities and scholarly societies, we speak with one voice against the unprecedented government overreach and political interference now endangering American higher education. We are open to constructive reform and do not oppose legitimate government oversight. However, we must oppose undue government intrusion in the lives of those who learn, live, and work on our campuses." That's a quote from the letter. Trump and his followers have said repeatedly, and I'm paraphrasing here, that higher education has a liberal agenda which warps the students' perceptions of life in America. Is that part of what you and others are objecting to, or are your objections mostly concerned with the efforts surrounding DEI, the elimination of DEI, cuts in funding to research projects, and the funding of other projects with strings attached that you find unattractive, or concerns about foreign students and their ability to stay here on their student visas?
Well, Mike, you asked quite a few questions there.
Yes,
and
I do.
There are a number of fronts on which colleges and universities are feeling under pressure, and it is quite a challenge to keep up with all of it. Meanwhile, we're in graduation season. We're about to send 500 fantastic people out into the workforce, over 100 of them into Charlotte and around the country and around the world. And so, you know, if I had to narrow it down, I would say the deepest concern is about it's against academic freedom and the ability of colleges and universities to do what we do best, which is to challenge ideas, to search for new ways to do things, to build on the status quo for a better society and so forth. And so when I see, for instance, in the administration's letter to Harvard that there needs to be oversight over the curriculum for you know, in specific departments for viewpoint diversity, to have third parties decide what viewpoints are and should be part of academic departments, that is deeply concerning. I've also spoken with, you know, in person with the president of Tufts after one of his grad students was literally taken off the street by unmarked persons in plain black clothes. The concern that caused to that educational community of Tufts. There are multiple fronts. We at Davidson don't believe that diversity, equity, or inclusion are bad words. In fact, they're some of the most noble words in the kind of societies and communities that we're trying to build. And even those who critique higher ed are talking about true inclusion, et cetera, and honoring diversity. So we need to have a conversation instead of feeling under attack, and we've been put on our back foot, but higher education provides a public good to society. It trains people for lives. It's the greatest source of social mobility in the country, and the return on investment is still good at most universities and colleges.
The letter that I read a portion of a second ago references opposition to, quote, undo government intrusion in the lives of those who learn, live, and work on our campus. It also references legitimate government oversight, which implies, of course, that there could be government intrusion that is valid or government oversight that is valid. If that's the case, what kind of government intrusion or oversight would be acceptable?
Well, we wouldn't call it intrusion in that sense because we'd call it legitimate. But well, first of all, we are a workplace. As a college university, we employ 1,000 people and create another 1,300 jobs. We need to guarantee basic standards of safety and honesty. We need to show that through our accreditation process that the value that there is value to our degree and that we're honoring what we promise our students. And one of those things would be to not saddle them with massive debt. Another would be that the degree that they receive is valuable. You know, there have been debates on both sides of the aisle about what Title IX means on college campuses. And so I do believe that the government is a force for good and should be a force for good. And that partnership with colleges and universities has been deeply intertwined for 100 years. And so the relationship between colleges, universities, and the government should be strong. Another thing I'd mention, Mike, one more thing, is just norms for research. It's very legitimate to make sure that research is safe and that the results reported are legitimate and so forth. So in that sphere of research, it's fully appropriate for the government to have standards. And there are thousands and thousands of pages of standards that are legitimate.
Talk briefly about the government and the relationship the government has had with colleges and universities over the last century and what that has meant to America and its standing in the world. What kind of relationship is it? Is it strictly monetary? Has it been strictly monetary? We'll fund you. You do the research. Give us the results. Is there more to it than that?
Oh, I think, Mike, it's a lot more than that. It's a fundamental question of who we are as America and how we create a quality of life for our citizens and keep America safe. So coming out of World War II, you see a lot of European nations forming national laboratories and funding that research by full-time employees who are scientists for the government. And instead, the United States decided to partner with major research universities to through the NSF and the NIH and other institutions to move that research out across the country, so reaching a broad geography of people, and to allow it to be part of the creativity on our college and university campuses. There's an argument there that the colleges and universities are funding most of that basic research, and the government comes in only when they see a targeted project that might have national security value or national interest. And so there's a lot of rhetoric that the government is subsidizing colleges and universities. You could easily make the other case that colleges and universities are contributing to the public good, including through research, in a way that's, to use the same term, subsidizing the public good, subsidizing government, in fact.
And in fact, it would be accurate to say, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of the medical research that results in drugs or treatments that benefit ordinary Americans start on college campuses, and then they are taken by pharmaceutical companies and others and put into the world at great profit. Would that be accurate?
That's exactly right.
Dr. Douglas Hicks is our guest. He's the president of Davidson College, one of the 600 or so presidents of colleges and universities who have signed a letter protesting some of the restrictions the Trump administration wants to put on higher education, and we will continue that conversation in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the letter sent by 600 or more now college and university presidents calling for some constructive engagement with the Trump administration after they put some restrictions or proposed some restrictions on colleges and universities. And our guest today, Dr. Douglas Hicks, is president of David College, one of the 600 signatories to that letter. We invited somebody from Duke University and from Wake Forest universities, also signatories to that letter, to join us. They were unable to do so. The letter, a portion of which I read, characterizes moves by the Trump administration as, quote, endangering American higher education. How so?
In multiple ways, Mike. First, higher ed is the greatest system of education in the world. We're, elites and others from around the world come to the United States for their education, both undergraduate and doctoral work, professional work. And so cutting off international students is unwise, and it's, it does not help America. We're the 10th largest export industry in America that is higher education. That's because we educate people from outside and who take American values back out around the world. But more so, this question of academic freedom and coming in and suggesting what we should teach and who should teach it and monitoring who is hired. These are not concepts about American freedom. They're concepts of control. And for universities and colleges to be great, we have to have the freedom to teach, the freedom to prepare students. The attacks on, first there's a rhetoric of free expression, but then there's also an executive order that tells us we can't use words like diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that feels like censorship to many of us. We have followed the law on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and we continue to do so. Every program at Davidson College is open to every student of whatever background, even affinity groups or specific religious communities, et cetera, are open to everyone. The government could do education better than we do is concerning, and it is keeping us from doing what we need to do.
The letter also says that colleges and universities are open to constructive reform, and I'm just curious. You can really only speak for yourself, but I'm sure everybody who signed that letter has an idea about this. Nothing is perfect. So, what areas do you see at Davidson or elsewhere in higher education that you think maybe could use a tweak here or there?
Sure, we can always do better with access, affordability, and opportunity, and we're trying to be a leader on that. We have gone out and we have one of the most generous alumni bases in the country every year, top five in terms of the percentage of our alums who give back to Davidson. We believe that financial aid should be generous, and that any people from across the socioeconomic distribution can come to schools, public and private, across North Carolina and the country. And the sector as a whole is not great at that. The data coming out of Harvard has shown that higher ed tends to educate those who are already from higher income classes. And we need to do better at that. And Davidson, again, wants to be a leader. It is true that colleges and universities have more professors who lean liberal or progressive than who lean conservative. Higher ed has always been a place that questions the status quo and is looking for progress, which is the root, of course, of progressive. And so I do believe that the college experience would be better for students if there were more breadth of perspectives, national, international, conservative, liberal, et cetera, on campuses. So I think that is one area. And most important, freedom of expression is something that we prize, we value, and there are always ways to do it better on a college campus because there are people in our community. It means it's imperfect and we can improve.
The president of the American Association of Colleges and Universities says that there was widespread agreement across a variety of academic institutions about the need to take a collective stand, and that's why 600 or more. This started very small and kind of blew up with 600 people signing it, and more are coming on board every day. The same approach has been suggested to the legal profession which has been under attack by the Trump administration. The same has been suggested about the media, which is also under attack by the Trump administration. All of these are hallmarks of control and authoritarianism, by the way, all of which are under siege. All of these institutions have been unfoundedly accused and have threats made against them and retribution planned by Donald Trump. Do you believe that the voices of 600 college presidents can move the needle?
I believe it can be part of positive momentum to have that constructive engagement we're talking about. I do, Mike. I don't think statements alone.
Do you think they're interested in having constructive engagement? It sounds like they're interested in having it their way or the highway.
Well, we are also trying to reach the public. I'm doing a webinar on Thursday with our 32,000 people in our greater Davidson community. I'm suggesting that other presidents do that. I do believe that political influence is important. And there are many Americans, perhaps listeners of this show, Mike, who haven't followed all of the cuts in or attacks on higher education. Like the administration last week basically said they want to eliminate the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for Humanities. There have been attacks on public broadcasting, on the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, the National Science Foundation, cultural institutions as well. And I do believe there are Americans who were not politically active or who may have voted for change in higher ed, but they didn't vote for this. And so I do go out in some kind of faith that Americans will speak up. The public opinion polling is saying we don't support many of these changes. And so getting presidents to stand together is part of that effort. And believe me, to get 600 presidents to agree on a lot is a minor miracle because we are small community colleges, we're large research universities, we're residential liberal arts colleges, but we all believe in the purpose of what we're doing. And it's the biggest form of social mobility in the country that is a college degree.
So those on the right in the past have referred to many institutions as the enemy. Among them, colleges and universities. That joint letter that you signed said that you would not surrender the independence, your independence, or your constitutional rights by succumbing to these demands. Has there been any response at all from the White House?
Not directly that I know. I'm at a conference today, and Secretary McMahon, the Secretary of Education, is speaking. I truly hope to get a chance to see her. Harvard has gotten a response from their perspective. And, we are calling for constructive engagement. And, I believe deeply in what we're doing. So we have to assume that if we press and we can get public opinion on our side, then the colleagues in the White House will need to talk to us. I've tried to take a non-conflictual approach, partly because I believe change happens when you treat others with mutual respect and know that they're being heard and their perspective matters. And I'm trying to take that approach here. And so we don't have to have a response right away, but we will keep at it. And we're trying to take the high road to say what a great value higher education is providing for students. We graduate 92% of our students who start. Very few of them have any debt at all, less than a quarter. A quarter of our U.S. students are Pell eligible low-income kids. So we are hitting the indicators of success that the administration says they want. So that has to be part of that conversation.
You're also about to graduate a Rhodes Scholar, another Rhodes Scholar, not the first from Davidson, Madeline Deroff, who's a senior and professional fiddler and one of only 32 American students to be selected for a Rhodes Scholarship. She graduates in 2 weeks from Davidson College. Columbia University was given a list. This kind of kicked it all off. They were given a list of demands by the Trump administration, which is they had to meet in order to maintain their federal funding, including abolishing the University Judicial Board, implementing a mask ban, granting full law enforcement authority to campus security officers. The demands also included a requirement for Columbia to complete disciplinary proceedings for students involved in pro-Palestinian protests. Columbia ultimately agreed. What's your reaction to that?
I found it understandable, but unfortunate that the interim president at Columbia felt she needed to sign off on some things that clearly violated academic freedom and the autonomy of a large university. It's not to say that Columbia didn't make serious mistakes in how they handled protests and demonstrations and sit-ins and encampments. They did. They made missteps. And then the presidents who appeared before Congress in a somewhat tense environment, even a hostile environment, did not show their humanity or acknowledge some challenges. So it's not that I didn't see problems, but I think it's highly regrettable that any university leader would feel such pressure that they had to give in on their values. And so you know, the letter to Harvard was even more harsh, Mike. But it's expensive, and to push back against the government is quite a challenge.
Well, that's my next question, because Harvard was submitted a similar list, a more stringent list of demands, and they refused to succumb. They're suing the government. They have deep pockets at Harvard, likely deeper than most academic institutions in America, maybe the world. And they put at risk, though, $2.2 billion in federal grants. You went to Harvard. So was it the mere fact of their enormous endowment that gave them the courage to make this move? Or is it that Harvard has a moral center that Columbia does not?
That, you know, I can't speak to the intentions or motivations of the presidents, so I won't try to read the heart of President Garber at Harvard. But I will say that the list of demands that was issued to Harvard, and then there was an argument that the letter was issued prematurely or mistakenly, those demands were oppressive in their scope and in their depth. So to come after the academic freedom of specific departments, all the things you read in the Columbia letter, all of those different dimensions of life on campus, you know, in America, there are legal protections and complex processes, like take Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. If there's a claim against anti-Semitism, if a claim that a university has allowed anti-Semitism to happen, there are specific targeted processes which involve investigations and are take some time. But to have a critique that there was anti-Semitism at Harvard, and Harvard admits the same, that there have been problems and anti-Islamic problems as well, but then to freeze over $2 billion of grants that are helping fight cancer and Alzheimer's disease and diabetes and all kinds of goods through the School of Public Health, the School of Medicine, and their hospital system, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for the well-being of America. It doesn't make sense for the education of those folks. And so Harvard had to speak up. And one of the things that the 600 presidents wanted to say was, we're concerned that we could be next. We're concerned that if Harvard gives in, then each institution could be targeted by the government. And you know what Ronald Reagan's statement was? He said the nine most terrifying words in the American language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. If we believe in free expression, we need to also be afraid of government intervention into that freedom.
But government does help, to be fair, and Mr. Reagan was partially wrong about that statement. It should be noted also that Columbia University has signed, if I'm not mistaken, this letter, despite their capitulation to the Trump administration. Was Davidson handed any demands by the Trump administration?
No, and I want to be clear, I'm not trying to invite any. In all seriousness, we're trying to speak with one voice with respect and to make our case about the positive value of Davidson College. So far, we've been fortunate that none of our 200 international students have had immigration or visa challenges. We have had faculty who've lost their grants, whose grants have been terminated, and it's a kick in the gut. Like, we have one professor, Rose Stremlau, who's writing the definitive history of Cherokee Nation in this country, and she had an NEH grant, which co-authored with another colleague from another school. That grant was terminated, and she was writing an important part of America's history and of the of Native American history. And after that grant had been offered and extended, 2 years later, you get the note that it's terminated because of a political change in the White House. It does not add up.
Are you worried? Are you concerned? And are others that signed this letter who have not been submitted any demands by the Trump administration, are you concerned that you'll be targeted because Donald Trump is known for his retribution activities?
Well, I certainly hope not. And again, the approach we've taken is to follow our statement of purpose, to live out our values, which includes our honor code and integrity at the front end. And sometimes silence is not adequate to the occasion. So we are trying to proceed with other thoughtful leaders in higher education to do our best to make our case and to take that case not just to political officials in the administration or congressional leaders, but to the American people, to your listeners, to say, look, the value of what we're doing is solid. And this attack on higher education and on cultural institutions, it's just not right.
But there are, in fact, risks involved in taking a stand against the Trump administration, allegedly, at least in pushing back on this administration. And according to the New York Times, Dr. Michael Roth, who is the president of Wesleyan University, says, and this is a quote, "This administration is very ready to exact retribution on its foes. I asked a lot of people to sign, and many people said, I can't sign. I'm afraid. We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about that with you." And that is Dr. Douglas Hicks. That would be who you is in this conversation, the president of Davidson College. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Douglas Hicks. Dr. Hicks is the president of Davidson College, one of the 600 college presidents and university presidents who have signed a letter asking for constructive engagement from the Trump administration. And based on some of the things that the administration has asked some colleges and universities to do, which they find to be onerous and intrusive, and perhaps potentially unconstitutional and un-American. There are risks, as I said, involved in signing this letter. And I mentioned that Dr. Michael Roth, the president of Wesleyan University, says this administration is very ready to exact retribution. A lot of people, he asked a lot of people to sign this letter, and they said, I can't, I'm afraid. What did you feel that you and your college, why did you feel that you and your college were in a position to do so?
Well, first of all, I felt it was an important moment to speak about what we believe. And I have a deep abiding commitment to what we do on this campus at Davidson. We're about to send 500 wonderful students out into the world, along with Madeline D. Roth, our Rhodes Scholar, and 499 of her closest friends. We are doing something important for the public good, for these students and for their communities. There comes a time to speak. I know that there are other presidents who wanted to sign, and conversations that happen with boards of trustees around the country. I know of presidents who said they couldn't sign because of the political pressures internally or externally, but they believe deeply in the process. And I had conversations with my board as well that I don't like them to be surprised, and I want to make sure that we are aligned. I've had meetings with the faculty. I've had a webinar with everyone on campus. And this week I'll talk to all of our alumni base, our parents and friends, because I'm not acting alone. I'm acting on behalf of a college that's been around since 1837. And we've had constructive conversations and work with the public, with government. So yes, is there a risk? Of course there is, but there's also a risk of not speaking.
Which brings up the fact that the University of North Carolina system, I believe, has not signed, nor has Elon University signed. How should, in your opinion, should we view institutions who do not fight government interference into their educational efforts?
I believe that every institution has its own context, and those leaders have to make decisions for themselves. I do wish that they perceive themselves to be in a position to sign, of course. And I also invited or reached out to other presidents to talk about first the content of the letter itself when it was being drafted, and to participate in that process, and then to make sure that others knew about it. Believe it or not, we get hundreds of emails every day, and some presidents said, thanks, I signed, I hadn't seen the letter. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. So, there are literally many public systems whose presidents or chancellors are not allowed. They're not being permitted to sign this or any other kind of statement with pushback. And that, of course, seems to run against all the values of freedom of expression and actually talking about hard decisions. So we have to, I do believe that if you raise some of the contradictions, and we are trying to have mutual engagement and to educate students. And then if there's a press pushback that seems unjustified, the public will have to see that.
We recently spoke with two college professors at UNC Charlotte whose research project was defunded by the National Institutes of Health. They were a third of the way through a three-year project, and it was defunded because the project, quote, no longer effectuates the program goals or agency priorities of the NIH under the Trump administration, as set by the political ideologies of the Trump administration. And those two professors spoke of the fear that is now permeating academia because of these restrictions that the Trump administration wants to put on some colleges. And even they spoke of even students having that fear because they feared that their progress through their goals within their college education may now have to change. And if they're close to graduation, they fear that some of the projects that they have been working on may put a target on their back for their future employment opportunities. Can higher education, can research, can scholarship in the United States, which is a leader, a world leader in all three of those areas, can it survive this?
Well, I certainly believe so, but it requires effort. You know, leadership doesn't happen by sitting on the sidelines and hoping that things change in Washington or somewhere else. We need to engage. We need to improve our institutions. We need to increase freedom of expression. We need to increase the job capacities and possibilities for our students as they graduate. I've seen the fear, Mike. We've had faculty who said that they've had to stall their research agendas because they no longer understand what will be funded and what won't be funded. Or if the NIH and NEA both say, well, we're not funding anything, well, that kills some motivation to go earn grants for competitive national grants to do that work. I've seen students and talked to them personally in my office who've had offers rescinded to work for the federal government for internships this summer. I've met with students who have had wonderful fellowships to do PhDs at some of America's greatest institutions, who later received a letter from that institution that either said, we're revoking that because we don't have the funding, or you can still come, but we can't guarantee your financial package. I've met with students who've had their offers taken away, and in response to their application, they've said, well, you've neither been admitted nor denied. We no longer have a program next year. We're stalling it. We're freezing it. And so this is affecting people at the specific level of individuals, well-meaning professors and students who want to start a life in, say, health or in education, and now they've got roadblocks.
The letter that you signed and was issued by college president says, quote, American institutions of higher learning are essential to American prosperity and serve as productive partners with government in promoting the common good. And today, as we've already spoken a little bit, there are those who view institutions of higher learning with suspicion and agree with Donald Trump that you are feeding students woke ideology, whatever that means. What's your response?
Well, I have an open invitation to anyone who'd like to come see what's happening on college campuses, to come visit Davidson College, to come meet with me or our students or our faculty. We have 230 human beings who are our professors at Davidson College, 230 different personalities and approaches and trainings, and they are united in their commitment to educate students. In the vast majority of those cases, they want students to learn to think critically and creatively for themselves. Are there times where a professor hopes that a student will think like they think? Yes, of course. But the obligation of the professor is to teach people to think for themselves. And that's what's happening in the massive, massive majority of cases on our campus and elsewhere. And so this idea that there's a woke ideology running around the thousands of higher ed institutions in America, it's just not accurate, Mike. There are ways in which the rhetoric of diversity, equity, and inclusion have been filled with some jargon or even ideology, but that's not the norm. And people understand that criticism, and we've seen a shift to value inclusion and belonging over equity over specific demographic numbers of diversity. And so those changes are happening. And to paint it with a broad brush that just discounts the whole industry is unfair and inaccurate.
Perhaps part of the problem here, and I think you might agree with this because of what I'm about to say about you, is that the ivory tower has become the ivory tower. People don't have access to it or don't take advantage of having access to it. I know that you believe that colleges and universities have to reconnect with their communities and to help them understand the value that these institutions bring to those communities. But is that the problem? Because college towns like Davidson know the value. They experience the value of college students being in their midst and professors being in their midst and the cultural advantages that colleges bring to these towns. Isn't it the places that don't have these institutions, the ones that really don't understand because they have no availability to connect with them? How do you establish those connections?
Well, for any listeners out there who want to invite me to come speak to their civic organization or business organization, I'm inclined to say yes, because we need to do that. The very local conversations to share that. But Mike, we did an economic impact study of Davidson College on the North Carolina economy, the Charlotte economy, 2 years ago. And, we say we understand the value of higher education, but did you know that the economic impact of Davidson College on North Carolina's economy is $500 million a year? We have over $400 million annually of an impact in Charlotte. And so when we think of our neighbors, we certainly think of folks in Davidson and the Lake Norman area. But part of our strategic plan is to make sure we're more engaged in Charlotte as a partner. We have a wonderful alumni base here, but we also want to see Charlotte as a cultural resource. The jobs in Charlotte are amazing, and we want our students to help contribute there. We have less than 10% of our students come from Charlotte and Western Carolina, 20% stay in this area. So that's part of the value we want to talk about. And then we need to be a good partner on public issues. And so I, as president, feel it's important to speak out on issues that matter and to join those civic conversations with business leaders and nonprofit leaders in Charlotte as well.
We have a question from a listener who emailed us. The president of a higher education institution has the responsibility to think, plan, and manage for the long term, which will last longer than one presidential administration. So how do you balance the day-to-day knee-jerk reactions and threats with the long-term goals of your institution?
It's a great question. And, you know, I've been saying one thing with faculty, trustees, students, and that is we have an obligation to be calm and not to, you know, I played baseball at Davidson, not very well, but I did play. And I say, we can't swing at every pitch. We need to keep calm and move forward. So, but then one of my faculty members reminded me that keeping calm is a privilege because there's so much anxiety among international students and faculty, people of color, those who feel targeted by removal of grants, as you said. And so I do believe that we need to be thinking long term. Our endowment is our biggest resource for long term, along with our campus and our reputation. And so unfortunately, all of those things are under attack at the current moment. And it feels vexing because we believe in what we're doing and we're trying to get better every day. So I am, you know, our strategic plan is looking out 5-10 years, connections with Charlotte, founding the Institute for Public Good, where we're training people to go out and be leaders in civic life and others. We're deeply committed to access and affordability. But when the current attacks are on things like our endowment, which funds the majority of which funds financial aid directly to students, that is our future. So the immediate, a lot of damage could be done in the current moment that affects our path to the future. And that's why we need to speak about it too.
We only have a couple minutes left, but you just mentioned a tax on your endowment. Back in February, there was news about a Republican push in Congress to increase the tax on the incomes generated by private college and university endowments. It was positioned by a New York Republican as controlling the purse strings to change behavior. During Trump's first administration, he boosted that tax by 1.4%. This congressman wants to boost it by 10%. Another Republican congressman from Texas has proposed boosting it by 21%. Where are those bills in process?
Well, as I understand it, there are a couple of House committees meeting focused on the budget, a budget bill. And it's unclear because there's so many variables moving in Washington right now. The Senate, as I understand it, is less excited about a significant increase than the House. But this is another case where, you know, I've been in Washington 4 times in the last 3 months. I'm going again next week. And I'm trying to make our case, what we do with the endowment and why coming after it is not the right thing.
Let me jump in here because we have 1 minute left. Colleges have been criticized for not using their endowment, for not reducing the cost of an education. How do you use yours?
The vast majority of our endowment goes directly to reduce costs for students. It goes to financial aid for students. It goes into their pockets. $30 million a year of our endowment payout goes directly to students in their pockets. So we are using it to make college affordable and to be able to offer an education that we otherwise couldn't provide on this campus and to make it available to students who otherwise couldn't have been here. Its endowment goes almost directly to students for financial aid.
And what would the impact of a 10 or a 21% tax on the proceeds or the profit or the in growth and investment of your endowment be?
What would the impact be? The tax would be on annual earned income. It could be a $20 million hit per year. That's what it could be if the most extreme bill were to pass.
And that's to how many students, you know, being helped?
200 full tuition or 250 full tuition scholarships a year.
I'm sorry to say, with that, we have to stop. Doug Hicks is the president of Davidson College, one of the 600 presidents of colleges and universities, and that number is growing, who signed a letter asking for constructive engagement with the Trump administration due to some of the things the Trump administration has asked of colleges and universities, which they find to be onerous. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.